This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The federal workforce, the federal city, District of Columbia. My colleague Francis Rose, who is the podcaster of FedGov Today. Preview episodes are available on Audioboom right now. And the host of FedGov Today, the TV show launching in March, is my guide on the district in recovery from the pandemic and these last years of turmoil in America. My visit to Washington recently acquainted me with the facts on the ground. No longer am I drawing on my memory of the fall of 21. Now it is the winter of 23. Francis, a very good day to you. What I comment on is coming from New York City, where everything is crowded all the time. The foot traffic is very light in the center of D.C. So are the lights on in the buildings I associate, not with the government, but with the attendant commercial enterprises, the lobbyists, the organizations, the lawyers. Those buildings looked half empty or more with lights on or not on. The street traffic also suggested light restaurant attendance, which I didn't much see walking around. I traveled to Farragut Square to dine with you at the Army Navy Club, which I highly recommend to everybody visiting D.C. It's as if Ike Eisenhower is still president. It's a wonderful environment, wonderful dining room. However, I worry about D.C. into the future. Work from home, as you've educated me these many months, is now the preferred version of the federal workforce. What is the future of downtown D.C. from your understanding? Good evening to you, Francis.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me on the program. First of all, it was wonderful to see you in Washington. It was my privilege to host you for lunch, and I just really enjoyed the chance to tell stories and enjoy each other's camaraderie. The future of the downtown space and the workforce and so on in Washington is really unresolved, and I think at this point unresolvable, because the primary driver of the economy, as you and I have discussed for years and years now, in Washington, D.C. proper, is the federal government. The same thing applies pretty much to the suburbs that surround the city. And a lot of the questions that you just asked me and that we've discussed recently on this program are the same questions that agencies are asking themselves. They're the same question that agencies are asking their employees. They're the same questions the employees are asking the agencies. What do you expect us to do? Where do you expect us to do it? And when do you expect us to do it? And as the thing that has struck me is the federal government sometimes is a little bit behind the private sector, sometimes is a little bit ahead of the private sector. And in this case, there seems to be a disconnect between what the private sector is doing and what the federal government is doing. The example that we're seeing is Wall Street banks, technology companies, and so on. Disney is the latest corporate example, are saying, we really think you should come back to the office, to their employees, at least a number of days a week. And in some cases, they're putting specific guidelines, guardrails around that, what they expect. Federal government hasn't done that. And if there's anything that I think I can say for sure about what the federal workforce looks like and what back to the office looks like, it's that every agency will be different based on the agency's mission, based on the composition of the workforce, based on the jobs that they do that require an employee to be on site. For example, you can't work remotely from if your job is to go to a Social Security Administration office on Main Street USA, where you take public meetings, in-person meetings with recipients, then obviously you can't do that remotely. You have to be there to meet with the people. So there's going to be a ton of different elements, different dynamics that dictate the result. And what that has given us is what you saw when you were here, John, which is a lot of flux, a lot of uncertainty about what the future looks like, and a lot of discussions with so far not a lot of actions about moving toward whatever that next phase is.
Your conversation with a member of the federal workforce working very hard, with Chris Cleary, the Navy, U.S. Navy's principal cyber advisor. What does government do? It thinks about the future, the undiscovered country. This is specialized language, but it's about the U.S. Navy and the U.S. Marine Corps, a vision that cyberspace is part of the conflict zone of the future. There are three words that are useful in describing how Chris Cleary and his colleagues are doing their jobs in what is called the information warfare community. I love this, Francis. secure, survive, and strike. Explain, please.
So those are the three components of the cybersecurity superiority vision that Chris came on my program and talked about. And it's been in place for about 3 months. Chris signed it out in October of last year. And those are the three elements that he describes in my conversation with him about what the Navy needs to do, where it needs to be, and how it needs to be doing the activity it undertakes to secure the Navy systems, yes, but also to provide cyber operations, cyber offensive capabilities. And, you know, my takeaway from this cyber vision document was regarding the cyber offensive operations. It's only been within the last, I would say, 5 to 10 years that the Defense Department has been comfortable even acknowledging that it undertakes offensive cyber operations or that it plans to do so in a time of conflict. And so for a document, an officially sanctioned public document, unclassified, from a very high level, high ranking official in the Department of the Navy to explicitly lay out how it intends to be prepared for offensive cyber operations and articulating the need for it. Why is this necessary? Why do we need to be able to do this? I think is striking. But those three elements that you describe are how the Navy is framing the way that it intends to operate its cyber defenses and offenses to support the warfighters. And it's not just for the Navy and the Marine Corps. It's in interaction with the rest of the joint force, John.
Secure is obvious. They keep out the bad actors who have ranged over our information systems these last decades of the 21st century. Survive, meaning the incoming, you must harden your information, your satellites, and your operatives in the Navy, on the surface, in the air. Strike is also obvious. But, Francis, there's a term that Chris used that I love. What is left of bang?
Left of bang is a term. Now, and in all fairness to Chris, I don't think he was intending to use it as a buzzword. But this is a book that came out 2014 by some gentlemen who are retired Marines. Left of Bang, How the Marine Corps Combat Hunter Program Can Save Your Life. And the term refers to the things that happen in the moments before something bad happens. And the reason that Chris uses that term to apply to what he's thinking about cyber is that's the mindset he wants to be in as he tries to get ahead of bad stuff happening in all three of those areas, secure, survive, strike. And I would argue, too, to the point that I made about offensive cyber operations, that applies in the defensive situation, too, because this document was one of the first ones that I've seen, again, officially signed out from DOD, acknowledging we will be attacked, our cyber systems will be penetrated. And the mind shift that's happened over the last 5 years, especially maybe 10 years in total in the federal government as an enterprise, but specifically in DOD, is moving from this idea of we're going to defend our networks and nobody will ever get in to understanding that that's balderdash. It's not possible. And so how do we mitigate the potential disaster that we could encounter if somebody's able to get in and roam around however they want? That's the component of the survive piece that I found the most interesting, is saying, hey, in 2023 and beyond, our system is open. People will get in. How do we keep them from doing the damage that they potentially want to do?
Before you go kinetic, secure, survive, strike. Is there a way of judging where they are in the process of transforming the Navy and the Marine Corps into this vision of the future? Are they 5 years away, 10 years away? I know they need the money. Congress is willing to spend. How soon can they get there, Francis?
Yeah, I think the challenge is that people like you and I think about this as a destination, and I think they're thinking about it as a journey.
Okay.
And so I don't think they ever get there, because by the time they get there, the bad guys will be continuing to move too. So I think they're trying to think of it iteratively and incrementally rather than a final place that we eventually get to.
So there's an arms race in cyber.
Yeah, big time.
Okay. Francis Rose, it's FedGov Today is the podcast. It's available now in previews. That's what I'm talking to, one of his podcasts. FedGov Today, the TV show, launches in March. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.